How are we all doing? Awesome. Oh my gosh, I am so doggone excited. They say, without inspiration, your knowledge is just knowledge on ice. Most people aren't inspired at all. They've been inspired and they've been knocked down. They've given life a shot and they've gotten beaten up and they've lost the will to fight. They've lost the will to just go for it again. And Ben Franklin said so many years ago that the average man dies at 21 and is buried at 65. And here we are today in 2008, and I would say the average man dies at 21 at best and is buried at 65. And so I have a question for you. I want you to kind of go back in your mind and think about a time that you were truly inspired. There's got to be something that you can remember when you were truly inspired, and maybe you did something that was beyond your own capacity or maybe even common sense. I want to share with you a little story. I was 16 years old. I was on a bus with a bunch of other cross-country runners, and we're heading to a race. And it wasn't just a race. It was a race against our high school rival, right? Now, if you think back to those days, all that really mattered in life in high school is your high school rival and beating them. You could lose every other competition, but as long as you beat the rival, then it was a good season. You guys know what I'm talking about? All right. So here we are. We're on the bus and we're going off to this place, and we're talking about not only do we want to beat them, but we want to have a perfect score. Now, in cross country, what happens is you have 7, 8, 9 guys running, and the fastest 5 guys that finish score, and you add up their score based on their place. So the first guy adds 1 point, second guy 2 points, third place 3 points, and so on. So a perfect score would be if you come in 1 through 5 before your competitor even finishes. You understand what I'm saying? All right, so we're like, we're going to do a perfect score. And I'm like, yeah, perfect score, you know. And I don't know why I was so pumped, because I wasn't the fastest. I've never been the fastest at anything. But I just keep going until everyone else quits. And then I look pretty good, you know. And so I was on the bus. I'm like, yeah, perfect score. Well, long story short here is we get into the race. And it's a 3.1-mile cross-country race to run all over the place. And I'm running along, and I'm realizing at about the 2-mile marker that our 4 fastest guys are, like, way ahead somewhere. And I'm in 5th place for the team. And not only am I 5th place for the team, but I'm tied with our rival's leader. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Right? Perfect score. Yeah. I was like, why was I all into that? And so I'm running along. It's like, we got about 1 mile left to go, and we come down this steep hill. We're running really fast down this hill, and we got to run right back up this next hill. But at the very bottom of the hill is this little creek, this little ravine. And so I run through this ravine, and as I take my first step out of the ravine, I feel a little tug on my foot. And what I realized had just happened was that in the ravine that was all muddy, it had this pulling effect on my shoe, to the point that it pulled it off of my foot. So now here I am. I'm looking at this hill. We've got probably 3/4 of a mile left to go. The first 4 guys way ahead. The rival leader is right next to me. I'm right here. And I have now 1 shoe on my 2 feet. What do you do? It's like, I always think, how do I find myself in these situations? It's like, oh. So what do you do? I'm like, what do you do? And you know what? I looked at the road ahead, and it was all gravel road, all little rocks, little gravelly road. And I'm looking at the guy, and I'm thinking about the team, and I'm thinking, do I go back and get my shoes? If I go back, it's over. I'm not going to be able to catch this guy. And if I go, it looks really painful. I'm like, you know what? There's no option. There's no option. Are you kidding me? Perfect score, Getchell, let's go! So I started running up this hill, and I'm like running like a madman. And I don't know if he noticed or not, because you kind of limp when you only have 1 shoe, you know? And I'm running up this hill, and I'm like, Getchell, you got to pull this thing off. You got to pull this thing off. We come down to the final stretch. You can see the finish line flag. There's about 50 meters left, and we're still neck and neck, you know? And I'm just limping along, you know? And like, he is not going to beat me after all this. And we sprint down the finish line, and I literally just outstep him and get the perfect score. Oh, man, it was such a great victory. I was so fired up. I was so excited. And so I looked down, and I went, I'm not wearing brown socks. And I went, that's not brown, that's red. And sure enough, I had absolutely ripped up my foot so bad that they took me to the hospital, stitched up my foot, I was on crutches for the next 2 weeks. And everybody's like, you are so nuts, Sketch. And I'm like, I'm aware of that, but we did get a perfect score, did we? They're like, we didn't care that much, you know? And I'm like, what? I thought the bus ride, the chant, no. But I tell that story because the reason I got inspired because something touched me deep as far as I don't want to let the team down. That is a core value of me. I want to be someone people can count on, some people can depend on. And that's a core value, and so it touched a place of inspiration to me. And that season, I still have today, one of my greatest awards that I really care about is I get the most inspirational runner on the team. Now they said we wanted to call it the craziest runner, but there was no award for that. So I got the most inspirational. It wasn't most valuable, that's for sure. It was just most inspirational. And I tell you that story because I hope there's a time in your life that you can think back. When were you maybe not so crazy, but when were you inspired to do something exceptional in your life? Because what inspiration really is, if you get down to it, is truly being in spirit. Inspiration comes from being in spirit. In spirit with what? In spirit with God's will, with who you're really all about. What are your core values? And are they in alignment with God's will at the moment? And see, I have a core value of being dependable. People can count on me. And so I found myself in that moment and it touched something it's called being in spirit or inspired. So here's what I want to share with you. To be inspired, to effectively waken the spirit inside of you, you must connect with something that stirs your soul, something that touches you deep down in a core value place. And the problem is, not a lot of people are inspired. Not a lot of people are in spirit anymore, because in fact, most people are just broken-spirited people. I was trying to think, what examples can I give of what stirs your soul? And I was flying up here yesterday from Orange County, And we had a layover in Las Vegas airport before we flew up here to Salt Lake City. And I was trying to think, what are some good examples? And Wendy so politely encouraged me. She goes, why don't you just go take a survey? I go, what are you talking about? She goes, well, take a survey. I go, survey of what? She goes, well, you want to know what stirs people's souls? Why don't you go ask some people? You're the big guy. Go do it. Why, thank you so much. So I did. I took a survey in the Las Vegas airport about what stirs your soul. And let me tell you what, there's a lot of broken people out there. And it wasn't just because it was Vegas, all right? Most people were just passing through. Here's the first 9 responses that I got, unedited, straight up, in order what I got. First of all, every person kind of had to get over the fact that I wasn't asking for money or anything else like that. Or, you know, and the gals I was talking to, Winnie was like, it's not a pickup line, you know. And so once they understood this was for real, these are the first 9 answers that I received. The first person looked up at me without hesitation. I said, what stirs your soul? What stirs your soul? And he just looked at me, the blank face, and he said, not having enough money to pay my bills. Without hesitation. And then a guy sitting next to him, who I didn't even ask the question to, who was leaning on his legs and his head was down, and he sort of mumbled something, and I said, I'm sorry, what'd you say? And he was sitting next to a guy who just finished saying what stirs his soul is not having enough money to pay his bills. The guy says, I said, not being able to give my daughter what she needs. And he put his head back down. I was like, whoa. I went and asked another guy, and he thought about it for a while, and he said, the only thing that ever seems to stir my soul is when I go to church. The fourth guy I talked to, his name was Andy. I said, what stirs your soul, my friend? And he looked up at me, and he said, oh, that's easy. He says, working away from my wife. He goes, do you know I've been married only 3 weeks, and 2 of those weeks I've been on the road working? He goes, I want to go home and see my new bride. I've only been married for 3 weeks. He starts just, I'm like, okay, thank you. You know, the fifth guy I look at, I said, what stirs your soul? And he just looked at me with a blank stare, and we had a little dialogue, and I said, no, seriously, what stirs your soul? And he goes, I have no idea. And I go, no, really. I go, just can you answer the question? He goes, I have no idea. I go, are you saying that because you just don't want to answer the question? Or are you honestly telling me you have no idea whatsoever of what stirs your soul? He says, I'm telling you, I have no idea what stirs my soul. The sixth person said, I just love traveling and experiencing other cultures and other people. The seventh person was an aging woman who was a security officer at the airport. And I walked up to her and I asked her the same question, what stirs your soul? And she just looked at me and she said, my kids. And when I asked why, before she could speak, I could see tears welling up in her eyes. And she said, my kids. And here's exactly what she said. She said, because they give me a reason to live each day. Why am I telling you all these things? Because I just asked a simple question to people I've never met in my entire life. This is the exact question answers that I received. You talk about broken people out there, and I'll get to the whole point in just a second, but listen to these. Listen to this. The last two. Next person I talked to. So what stirs your soul? And he says, you know what stirs my soul? I'm disturbed. And he started talking about all the financial recluse stuff going on and everything in America. And he said, I'm disturbed that more people live by their head and not by their heart. Whoa. And then finally, I asked this other gal, and she looked at me and said, what stirs my soul? And she said, there's only one word that keeps popping into my head. I said, what's that? She said, guidance. I said, guidance, why? She looked at me and said, the idea of just having some guidance in my life versus being lost. I go, are you kidding me? And she looked back up and she said, I lost my daughter. My daughter died. And through the trauma of that whole thing, I lost my marriage. And I just have no guidance in my life. I just am tired of being lost. Can you believe what's going on out there? Life is tough, you guys. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here going, I don't know why I'm getting emotional. I don't know these people. I shouldn't care, right? It's a Las Vegas airport. Crying out loud. But I do care because this is reality. This is life in our own backyard. In our own backyard. Well, let me tell you what. Life is tough, but there's a solution. A few years back, I was with a friend who got the devastating news that he was terminally ill. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. I hope you never have to go through it. But talk about feeling helpless as a friend, where there's absolutely nothing that you could do. And I watched this friend first go through denial, then he got very, very angry, and then he got very, very depressed, and then reality set in, and he started taking care of business, doing what he needed to do, and then, I will say, he started living life. He did things that he had never done that he always wanted to do. He spent all his time with his wife and his beautiful two children. And when he passed, and I watched that family try to pull together, it made an impact on me. And if I can do anything to help people prevent stuff somehow, just somehow promote better health, wellness, I'm going to be a part of it. I was in I took a group of people to a convalescent home. And I was a senior in college. And there's an image in my mind that I'll never, ever forget. When I walked past this door, I was walking past the door of one of the rooms in there, and I stepped back and looked, because I looked in this door and I went, now this is something I'll never forget. And there's an elderly woman laying in this bed with all kinds of wires and all kinds of things hooked up all over her body. I mean, she was obviously on her very last moments. But what was really profound to me was that there was an old man. Couldn't have been more than 120 pounds himself. Shriveled up, just a little man in the same bed, curled up next to her. Just laying next to her. And I just looked at that and I went, now that is true love. to not have to pass alone, to have a mate, to have friends, to have family, be there to the very bitter end, curled up next to you in your bed with you. Is that not what relationship should really be all about? Is that not what it's all about? And I'm sorry again, I have to apologize for being emotional, but I warned you up front. I'm all fired up and they told me to talk about inspiration. And here's my main point. This is what I'm getting to. This is the whole point of everything that I wanted to share with you. You can get all the knowledge of the world of the greatest plan that can change your life, and you can get the instruction manual of how to operate this great plan to change your life. But if you don't have the inspiration to come with it, it's going to be knowledge on ice. A few years back, I saw a movie. I'm sure many of you saw it. It's called Seabiscuit. Anybody see that movie? Man, what a great movie. And if you haven't seen it, I just encourage you to get this movie because I think a lot of us could relate. Seabiscuit was a racehorse born of great lineage, but unfortunately was born very small with stumpy legs and they couldn't even straighten out and it wasn't going to amount to anything. But then a team of people came along. And the first person was Charles Howard, who had a devastating situation in his own life and felt for the horse and purchased this horse to give it a chance. Then there was a guy by the name of Tom Smith, who was the trainer, the coach, working with Charles Howard, and his main word was believe, I believe, I believe. And he believed in this broken little small horse. And then the third part of this team was a running mate. A running mate. And this was a guy by the name of John Pollard, known as Red, also from Edmonton, Canada, for all you folks from Edmonton, Canada. And he was the magic of the puzzle, this whole thing, because the horse was too small, but they said to Red that he was too tall. So you've got a too small horse and a too tall jockey who happened to be blind in one eye and was all busted up from his accidents. And they say, you can't run as a horse and you can't jockey as a jockey. Oh-ho-ho, but they didn't know the team that had come together. And this team came together and started winning races, and started winning races. And in 1938, they had more press in the newspapers. They were the number one most highlighted individuals in the nation. Second was Hitler, and third was Roosevelt. And the reason for that is because a disillusioned have-nots, all the people who just got out of the Great Depression, identified, championed a hero that they could relate with. The down-and-outers that are stepping out, the broken-spirited that are stepping back up to the plate. And the victories that they had, and if you get the movie, I'm not going to mess up the finish, although it was an amazing come-from-behind victory. But the key to me of the whole movie was when the writer, Red, John Pollard, said, Seabiscuit was given a second chance and the most was made of it. We all have been given a second chance in our life. And the question is, are we going to make the most of it? You associate with this group of people. You've got a coach. You've got running mates. You've got people that are believing in you and pouring in all kinds of belief into you. This is your chance. What are you going to make of it? Are you going to hang on to the failures of the past? Or are you going to set yourself free to hit levels that you didn't even know were possible? Jason Lezak, an amazing athlete. He was the captain of the U.S. men's Olympic swimming team this last year, 2008. A lot of people think that, what's his name? Yeah. Phelps, who's also known as unhuman, was the captain, but it wasn't. It was Jason Lezak, who was on his third Olympic team, was the captain of the U.S. Men's swim team. And let me tell you about setting no limits. Let me tell you about saying goodbye to your past and hello to my future. Okay? Let me tell you about this. Listen to Jason Lezak. Jason Lezak swam for UC Santa Barbara, the same team I swam for. He swam for the same coach. There's an indirect connection there. And I remember watching this race. They had it about midnight, for whatever reason, on television. The 400-meter freestyle relay, 2008 Olympics. Here it is. The American men are standing up there and they're fired up. They want to win this. The French are the number one favored 400 freestyle relay team. They've got four of the fastest 100 meter specialists in the world. And they've been saying, we're going to win. We're going to take the gold. Now, here's the key. The key is that the Americans have always been winning the 400 freestyle relay. In fact, up until the year 2000, the Americans had won it every single time in the history of the Olympics. It's just one of those races we just never lost. Until the year 2000 in Sydney, Australia, when the men lost for the first time, I believe it was to the Australians. And there's a guy who anchored that relay that when he touched as American in second place was the first time in the history of America we didn't come home with the gold in that event, in the history of the Olympics. His name was Jason Lezak. Could you imagine getting on that plane home going, the history of the Olympics, we've never lost until me? That's pretty heavy. Well, he decided to stay on for four more years. In fact, the coach called me one time and said, Jason's trying to continue swimming. He needs some sort of supplement financially. Would you be willing to help out so he can keep training for the 2004 games? And I said, absolutely. It didn't end up planning out that way, but I was willing, and that was how much he was struggling to hang on for 2004. Jason got back up in 2004. The men's 400 freestyle relay was there. And guess what? For the second time in the history of America, the Americans lost the relay again. And guess who anchored that relay for a second time? Jason Lezak. 4 years later, Jason says, I'm hanging on. 4 years later, he's now 32 years old. It's his third Olympics. He's the oldest male competitor on the U.S. swim team. He's anchoring this relay, and he's standing there with the other guys, and now they're not favored for the first time in the history of the world to win this event, and the French are favored, and here's the story as it plays out. This is unbelievable. I'll never forget this, watching this on television. And what happened was we had Michael Phelps, right, standing up there, the unhuman man that he is. And he jumps in to lead off the relay, touches. This is not even an event that he swam in the Olympics. And when he touched, he set a new American record in the 100 meter freestyle. Good job, Michael. So we're in the lead. The next two guys on the team, they jump in and they swim incredibly fast times as well. Some of the fastest splits ever swum. But because the French are so powerful in this race, they now have a fairly commanding lead. In fact, almost a full body length lead. And in 100 meters, which is only two laps of the pool, that's a long distance. And particularly when the guy who's hankering for the French happens to be the current world record holder in the 100 meter freestyle. So here you are, Jason Lezak. Stand up on the stage, 2000 Olympics, 2004 Olympics, now the 2008 Olympics. Now you're behind. You look over and the world record holder in this event has got a body length lead on you. He dives in. Jason, you just can see him. He's just like, oh, not again. And he dives in and he's swimming. First lap of the pool, I don't see a whole lot of change. But the second lap of the pool, I see Jason starting to literally run down the world record holder in this event. And I'm watching him, and I'm seeing him dig. I'm seeing his shoulders just digging. I'm seeing his body come up higher on the water, and I'm seeing each pool he's digging so hard, and he's catching. Little by little, he's catching. And I'm sitting on the edge of my couch because I know the whole story. I know the sacrifices I made. I know the baggage that he's been carrying with him about how he's the one who's caused these fail. I know all this, and I'm watching him. He's catching him. It's down to the middle of the pool. He's still behind. He's catching. I'm like, oh, geez, and you're going to run out of pool, man. Come on, somehow, some way. And he's catching him. Within the flags, there's from this podium right here to the edge of the stage, within the flags, you can see it, and you can replay this, you can watch this. You see him just digging so hard and so deep, and all of a sudden on the final stroke, and he's still behind with the final stroke, he jams his hand into the wall, hits the wall, and wins by 8/100ths of a second. Boom! Let me tell you, it was like 12:30 at night. I'm like, yeah, I'm screaming in my house. You know, I'm just so fired up. But here was the moment. I got to finish fast here. Here was the moment. They get out, new world record, got the gold medal. The reporter goes up and says, this is unbelievable. Michael Phelps leading off with an American record. You guys having some of the fastest relay splits. And they went to Jason. He said, Jason, I don't know if you're aware of this, but your split was the fastest split by over a half a second in the history of the 100-meter freestyle. Your split was over a second faster than the world record. It's impossible what you just did. It's impossible. 46.06, never been done before, not even anywhere remotely close to that fast. How did you do it, Jason? And they put the microphone up, and his answer was profound. He looked at the reporter and he said, well, I guess I just got tired of losing. And so I ask you, at this point in your life, has it gotten to the point yet where you're just tired of losing? You're just tired of being broken, just tired of coming in slightly short, time after time, year after year. Are you just tired? Are you ready to step up to the plate and say, it's now, it is my time to be inspired. Now is my time for my own personal achievement and my gold medal. I sure hope so. Almost 2 years ago today, on my son's third birthday, I was having a very nice, sound sleep on my Tempur-Pedic bed. And my son, 3 years old, comes bursting in my room at some unknown hour. It's very dark outside still. I think it was pretty much middle of the night. And he screams at the top of his lungs on his birthday, Daddy, Daddy, wake up! I go, what, what? He goes, Daddy, life's happening. Folks, wake up. Life's happening. Life's in session. It's time for you to win. Let's go to the top. Be inspired. Chase your dreams. Stir your soul. Make a difference in somebody's lives. God bless you. I love you.